6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
So I want to start this podcast out by talking about my favorite dong.
I'm sorry, what?
My favorite dong.
All right, explain.
So I was just at the auction today. And at the auction, you get in and out of a lot of cars a lot. And you know...
Oh, sure. You're talking about chimes.
I'm talking about a chime, but this isn't a chime. This is a pleasant dong. And I always go for a pleasant dong. So we were at the auction, and my wife used to own this car, which is why I thought of it, and she also could appreciate a good dong.
It's a CRV.
It's a CRV. Now, hear me out, right? When you get into a lot of cars, there's buzzers with keys and lights and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, old Hondas, they go, meep, 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 meep.
Oh, yeah, I know the one.
Not a pleasant dong.
No.
But it's not the best. When you take the key out, and if you leave the lights on, it goes, ding, dong. Ding, dong. And that is a pleasant dong.
That's a good one. What do you think of the everlasting, ever famous Ford one?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's not a dong. That's a chime.
Yeah. And I feel like most people are in the same boat.
You want to care to make that noise?
Do-do-do. Do-do-do. Yeah.
That's exactly right. No, I mean, I think that oftentimes car bings and bongs go a little overlooked. I mean, it's better than like the 70s when they were all... Exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, like Lincoln actually employed the Detroit Symphony Orchestra to come up with their...
Very nice. Very classy.
Very classy. But let's talk about some of the greatest dongs in history.
Oh, boy.
The world's best dongs. We have... we've got the BMW dong.
Yeah, the...
Bling! That's right. That's good. Yours is really good. I think that's easily one of the best dongs.
Sure, yeah.
And then you got the Honda dong.
The one that you just...
Ding, dong.
There are some newer luxury brands that are doing very... Well, almost like what you're talking about with the Lincoln having an orchestra do it. I feel like some of the newer luxury brands are having some very luxurious chimes and tones. I'm not going to say dong. I'm just not going
to
go there.
Case refuses to say dong.
Yeah.
That's what they are. Oh, you know what? They might be bong with a B. Shoot.
Start the podcast over.
It's bings and bongs, not dings and dongs, isn't it?
You know what? I don't know if there's a scientific term. So it is what we make it.
Anyway, enough talk about my favorite dongs. let's talk about something much more pertinent, which I thought would be a really fun discussion.
Yeah.
Listen, Case and I have some eccentric car taste.
Sure.
And we like a lot of the classic cars that you're supposed to like as a car guy, such as 911s and that kind of thing. But we are also passionate about some cars that most people consider awful or bad or flawed or whatever. And today we're going to have a friendly and in some cases less than friendly argument, find out if our car taste is really that bad or if we've got some merit with the cars that we like and dislike.
There's a few of these that we agree on. There's definitely also several that we don't like. And to your point, I think, I don't know, we get to spend so much time around so many different cars, a lot of them the very popular cars that tons of people drive, the 911s, the Mustangs, the vehicles that you see every day when you go out and hit the road, we drive those a ton. So sometimes it's fun to experiment with something that's a little different, a little unique, even if it's an objectively bad vehicle. Sometimes they have enough going for them to pique our interests.
Yeah, and I'm going to go first because I think that this is really good. And this we're going to immediately start with an argument. But look, we're both off-road enthusiasts, right? We both own four-wheel drives. We spend a lot of time off-road. And one car that we own for a period that I genuinely thought
Exactly what it is.
What is it?
It's the Jeep Compass?
No, it's not the Jeep Compass.
Because I hated that. Or the Renegade. Sorry.
We'll get to the Renegade.
Or the Liberty. I didn't like any of those.
Case named it already. It's the first generation Jeep Liberty.
Yeah, I got to say, that car, to me, screams illegal substances.
Why?
I don't know. It's just a very...
Case is treading on thin water. Yeah,
I don't want to offend anyone, but to me, it looks like a slightly methy car.
It's a little methy.
Yeah.
It's a little methy.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. But hear me out. First things first, not a looker, right?
No.
Not a looker. Kind of weird and bubbly. The front end kind of looks like a toad. It's got those weird like eyes that stick up, right?
Yeah.
And then the biggest problem with the Jeep Liberty is it replaced one of the most beloved Jeeps of all time, which is the XJ Cherokee.
Yeah. There it is.
Right?
Yeah.
And here's the thing.
XJ is a handsome vehicle.
XJ is a handsome vehicle, right? It lasted something like 17 years. I think it was like 84 through 01. Does that sound right? I'm pretty sure that's right.
It made it into the 2000s for sure.
Sold millions of them. And then they replaced it with the Liberty, which was not solid front axle. It looked like a toad. It didn't have the 4-liter inline six. I mean, I could go on the list of why people don't like Liberties.
3.7?
3.7. Yeah. The mighty 3.7.
Well, by your account.
But the thing about Liberties is, even though they are a very flawed vehicle, they do Jeep things incredibly well. So Jeep actually took this vehicle down the Rubicon Trail when developing it to make sure it still has the off-road chops.
That'd be a sight to see.
Well, yeah. I mean, but that's the thing.
It's like, trail rated.
We make fun of the Liberty, but it has all the stuff. Like, yes, it's independent front suspension, but they have skid plates. They've got incredible approach and departure angles. The wheels are right to the corners. They've got solid rear axles. They've got low range. And when you combine all that, and it's what is still, by modern standards, a relatively small and light vehicle, they're super good off-road.
I'll admit, we did have an inexpensive Liberty that we used in a video series, took to Moab, and I was pretty impressed with what that car was able to accomplish on some of the trails that we take tons of off-road trucks and SUVs on. Liberty did okay, so I'll give it that. The other thing about it, the version that I least dislike is the one that's got...
The Renegade.
Yeah.
The Liberty Renegade.
Yeah, so in early use of the name Renegade, it has some lights up top. Mm-hmm. What, maybe, did they do something with the bumpers?
They did.
I don't know that much about the Liberty Renegade, to be perfectly honest.
So the Liberty Renegade is kind of like the Rubicon version of the Liberty. Changed around the front bumper, different wheels, tires. They gave it rocker protection.
See, look at that. I'm okay with that, actually.
Yeah, actually, they were pretty cool.
Look at the one blasting through the mud.
Yeah, dude. I mean, and they were legit four-wheel drive off-roaders. You could get them with manual transmissions in the Liberties. And the thing is...
Do they have diesels in those ones?
They did. Oh. That's a great point. So for a very short amount of time, you could get the first-gen KJ Liberty with the Via Maturi diesel engine, which, if you want to get a kick out of something, go online and look up straight-piped and like deleted CRD Liberty. They sound crazy. They make all the right noises.
Did they do any of... the Liberty Renegades as diesels?
I don't think so. I think
you'd have to make your own.
You'd have to build your own, yeah. But I mean, that kind of in the right color and the right spec.
Yeah, the Liberty Renegade with some of the extra goodies, I actually don't mind as much than compared to the ones that we had.
Well, the part of the problem with the Liberties is they have a reputation for dying immediately. But much like their methy look will have you believe, they either die immediately or live forever, and there's nothing in between.
Yeah.
Like, talking to people that own Liberties, it was either the worst car they've ever owned, and they had to lemon law it at 8,000 miles, or it's made it 297,000 miles on three oil changes and will not die.
Is this the reason that people always say that Jeeps are unreliable?
This might be. This is kind of the start of that era when they went away from the 4-liter, right? Yeah. 3.7 V6.
Because that's the thing. 4 liters are pretty solid. Even the Pentastars that they've been doing for a long time, those are pretty solid engines. So I really feel that Jeep has, in general, made many reliable vehicles. But I'm wondering if this is one of the reasons that people don't see it as such.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, this was the start of kind of some major evolution in Jeep and also some major quality problems. This was the start of the Daimler era.
But it was a later Liberty that had that top that always leaked, right?
Yeah. So this is the KJ Liberty. And I like these more because they're kind of small and compact. And they genuinely, they drive the best and the worst parts of a Wrangler. So they're kind of wobbly and top heavy. But you got this vertical windshield, great visibility. So it kind of, it drives a lot like a like an early 2000s Wrangler. Then the next gen, they went to the KK Liberty, which was a really square one. Mm-hmm. They were arguably better cars, more spacious, more roomy. And then they had the one-touch power top option, which is a crazy feature. It's a huge canvas top, a hole cut into the roof. And with one touch, you can slide the fabric open. But the story behind it is they didn't want to pay the leading top manufacturer in the world to design it because it was too expensive. So they went and they had to work around their patents to design it themselves on the cheap. They failed immediately. They constantly leaked, and they were very, very poorly engineered, the tops on the second-gen Liberties.
And we've had both versions, haven't we?
And which one did you like more?
Neither.
Neither!
Yeah,
case!
Neither. I got to be honest. But if we had had a Liberty Renegade, then maybe I would have liked it. Also, for the record, Tommy likes the Renegade, and I do not.
That was another car.
That was such a bad car.
Why is
it was so bad, Tommy.
Why is it bad?
So first things first, you would get in the car, start it up, and maybe we had an engine mount that was struggling a little bit. Something had to be wrong with this car, because you got in it, and the whole car vibrated like a motel massaging bed from the 70s. The car would just shake. And I could not believe somebody had driven this Renegade more than 100,000 miles. And after that period, that person must have absolutely hated cars and hated driving, because this was buzzy and uncomfortable, slow, not particularly great looking, kind of okay off-road, but not okay enough to justify it existing. If somebody told me, oh, can you drive the Renegade today to go do this or that, I would do anything to get out of it.
Case, genuinely, I've never seen him dislike a car more.
And every now and then I would think, am I being a little too hard on this car? And then I would get in it, start it, and feel the whole thing buzz to life. And I would think, no, this is absolutely the most unrefined modern car I've ever been in, and I hate it.
But the crazy thing about Renegades is I've driven a bunch of them. Ours was a little buzzier than usual. Not that much buzzier. No. It's a large displacement, 2.4 liter four-cylinder Tiger Shark, and they just kind of shake and rattle and buzz. Yeah. I had a soft spot for this car because it was a great piece of packaging. It had a really small footprint, but it held a lot of things. You could put a ton of stuff in the back of the Renegade.
Wow. So it's basically, and we had this conversation a couple times, it's basically a Ford Bronco Sport before the Ford Bronco Sport, and also much worse.
Yes, it is, but it was like in 2015 when that came out, when the Trailhawk came out, there was nothing like it, you know?
And thank God now there is.
But genuinely, what would you buy?
Tommy,
other than the Bronco Sport,
in the Middle Ages when the Black Plague came out, there was also nothing like it. That doesn't mean it's a good thing.
Listen,
this car is not anything for anyone to strive for. It was so bad,
guys. It was kind of a cool idea, though. You take a tiny affordable crossover and you give it actual skid plates, actual tow points, an actual decent all-wheel drive system with different modes. I mean, like Subaru with the Crosstrek, they were nowhere near the capability. Honda with the HR-V, the CHR, nothing could touch
Fair.
It. And today, the only car that really, 10 years later, is the Bronco Sport.
Yeah, and the Bronco Sport is actually good. Look. Vintage Tommy. One thing about... Did you have multiple Renegades,
or was that a press car?
Oh, okay. So there is one interesting thing about the Renegade, a rare option where you could actually have removable roof panels on the car.
Yes.
And my girlfriend's cousin, who I have not expressed my vast dislike of the Renegade to.
She's probably listening right now.
I guarantee Alexis is not listening to this podcast, but she has one of these Renegades with the removable roof panels.
Yeah.
And they live in Texas, kind of near where we go film with Toyota sometime. So next time we're there, we got to go film that car. I feel like that would be a really exciting day for you to get to check out the Renegade with the... Have you ever seen one?
Literally, I kid you not, I've seen hundreds of Renegades in the past few years. And every time I see one, I look for the removable tops.
Never has it.
Never seen one.
Hers has it.
Not even the press cards had the removable tops. Yeah, there were these holes. They're kind of like Jeep tops.
Yeah.
They come out. That's amazing.
I don't know if she's ever actually taken them out.
Is that enough to save the Renegade for you?
No, not even. Not even close, Tommy.
I think once we get you behind the wheel of the facelift turbo model, your opinion will be changed.
We'll see, but I doubt it.
Imagine instead of that buzzy, slow four-cylinder, we replace it with a smaller four-cylinder that's slightly less buzzy.
Slightly, wow.
With nearly 27 more horsepower.
It's a raving review.
Yeah. Look, I understand. Would this car be better with a turbo engine and a manual? Because that was an option.
Funny enough, our old coworker Alex, he and I and a bunch of our friends, we did a trip to Italy, and he rented a manual diesel Renegade.
Oh, the Holy Grail.
Well, it was still pretty lame.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
So, no, I don't think there's any fixing the Renegade for me. I don't actually hate the way it looks so much. Another fun fact. When we can pull up a picture, these cars, they did stoppies.
They did. When they launched, they were so short
Jeep
and stubby.
Jeep Renegade stoppy.
Yes, they had a problem.
Look at that.
They had too much brake proportioning in the front.
That's the best thing about that car.
They fixed that problem on ours, don't stress. But on the early ones, you could actually lift the rear tires off the ground if you hit the brakes hard enough.
Yeah. It's not a good car, Tommy.
Case, I think all of its problems aside, it still is a pretty cool little thing.
Well, as retaliation for you making us talk about these Renegades, I'm going to pick for my first vehicle something that you also don't like.
What is it?
It's the first generation Cayenne Turbo.
Oh, God.
Yeah. This is a handsome, well, maybe it's not handsome.
Handsome is the only thing you cannot say about the first gen Cayenne.
You know what? It's handsome in a, I was wealthy 20 some years ago.
No, not that one, Cole. That one actually looks semi-okay. Case likes...
Yeah, like the silver one, that third picture?
Case likes the first...
Oh, no. Below that?
Yes, yeah, yeah. The really
there
hideous
we go.
One.
Look at that.
It looks like it's holding two grapes in its cheeks.
Yeah. It almost looks like a Pokemon.
It's horrible.
That's not why I like it, though. But the everything else about it, they're cool, Tommy.
What do you like about the first-gen Cayenne Turbo?
I kind of like the way it looks. I actually kind of like the grills.
Yeah,
like dude,
that?
Look at that. When especially those wheels, that's so early 2000s status. I've never actually gotten a chance. So I've driven a first-generation Cayenne that was absolutely run into the ground. It was one of the most clapped-out cars I've ever driven.
That's every first-gen Cayenne.
Yeah, pretty much. Slipping transmission, flat tire, not a Mako paint job because it wasn't that good.
Was this an auction car?
No, this was a car that belonged to a guy that I knew in college who, he was an interesting cat. He had some very out there vehicles, but he had a first gen Cayenne that I don't, well, you've been in a Boulder for a long time. Did you ever see a really clapped out first gen Cayenne that was flat black?
Did it have like an aftermarket front bumper on it?
Yeah, that was like broken to pieces.
Straight piped?
I don't know if it was super loud.
Okay, because our mechanic, that might be the same car. Our mechanic keeps telling me about this guy who goes to him sometimes, Toby, and has a really bad Cayenne, and he lives up in the mountains, and it's a total clap thing.
See, the car, when I first saw this car, I was touring CU, and I saw this Cayenne parked on what we call the hill here in Boulder location, and I saw this flat black Cayenne that was broken to bits, and I thought, that's an awful car. And then later on, I knew this kid that had a clapped out gloss white Cayenne, and I was like, I saw another car like this that was flat black. He said, yeah, this one used to be flat black. Oh, it's the same car.
Oh, it's the same car.
So, yeah, really, really terrible car, but not these turbos. And these turbos, when they're in good shape, they've got pretty cool looking gauges, kind of a cool interior with the little grab bars, V8. What was the power output on the first gen turbos?
It's like 400. Yeah. I think it was 400 exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty good. The bad is owning it. What was it we were talking about recently? Was it like the ceramic brakes that you could get? Maybe not on a first gen.
No, it was. Yeah, like there was an option package, and I think it only you could get it on other Cayennes, but it's primarily found on the Porsche Cayenne Turbo S. You could get them with ceramic brakes, or maybe they all came with ceramic brakes, and it's like a $24,000 service if you have to get brakes for a car that's worth maybe $9,000.
Yeah.
You know, like that's...
Which is tough.
So the thing is, I don't hate the first-gen Cayenne, especially because they are off-road beasts, right?
Yeah.
They have low range. You can get them with locking diffs. You can get them with rock rails.
Is that the one that was shared with the Touareg that you like?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is based on the first-generation T1 Volkswagen Touareg, which we owned and loved, and it was great. And the thing about the Volkswagen is it does everything the Cayenne does. But it doesn't look like a cuttlefish.
And that's where it goes wrong.
That's where it goes. But are you telling me you park a first-gen Touareg and a first-gen Cayenne side by side, and you look at that Porsche and you're like, dang, that girl's got cheeks. And I don't mean butt cheeks. I mean cheeks.
Yes. 100%. I think actually the first-gen Cayenne is pretty great. I do like your first-generation Touareg. That was a good vehicle.
What do we think, though? What's cooler? First-gen Cayenne twin turbo. Gas, fine, whatever. First-gen V10 TDI diesel. Touareg. You got it. I got the option of both. Which one are you going for?
Cayenne.
Why? You just have some weird nostalgic thing about these Cayennes.
Tommy once actually said that this particular Touareg was his favorite car. I asked him, you know, all-time favorite car. You could pick anything. And he said... that
at the time it kind of was, yeah, because it's the only car that's able to go 150 miles an hour on the German Autobahn, lift up and tackle the Rubicon Trail, be comfortable and refined, get 14 mpg. I mean, that was not good, but it was a really amazing piece of engineering that was like the height of the Ferdinand Piëch over engineering era at Volkswagen, and it was super cool. I'd love a V10 TDI for like a month and then never have to drive it again, because they are incredibly expensive to service. Everything's an engine out job. Everything's an engine. Turbos need to be replaced every 50,000 miles. It's an engine out job. They have stuff like water-cooled alternators, which is awesome, right? They've got gear-driven alternators, which is just stupid.
Seems like mixing water and the electricity of an alternator is a good idea. Good idea.
Starter is an engine out job on a V10.
Jeez.
I mean, it's just like crazy stuff because these were so packaged tightly.
Yeah, which... is kind of the same case for that first generation Cayenne turbo, mm-hmm. in different ways and for different terrible reasons, but same thing.
Now, how about this?
I'd love to drive a nice one and own it for a month and then...
never again.
Yeah.
V6 Cayenne. Not a bad car to own.
I gotta have a V8.
Oh, come on. What do you mean you gotta have a V8?
It's an SUV.
It's gonna be slow regardless.
Yeah, your logic is so bad. At least it could be slow and sound good.
Yes. Okay, I'll give you that.
You know what I mean? What's your next?
Okay, next car. This is going to be a very controversial one. Pontiac Aztec.
Yeah, you do like the Aztec. This was well before my time, but the company owned an Aztec.
We did, yeah. Pontiac Aztec debuted, crazy styling. People hated the way it looked, right? it was supposed to, the original plan for the Aztec, we talked to Tom Peters, who's the chief designer of the Aztec. His original concept was a lifted four-wheel drive Camaro, which was really a cool idea. And the concept drawings were awesome.
The execution, though.
Well, the bean counter said, this is a great idea. We want you to base it on the Pontiac Montana minivan, which is, or maybe Chevrolet Montana, which is not exactly an enthusiast-minded vehicle.
So, and as a result, you got this not exactly enthusiast-minded Aztec.
But what you ended up with was this horrible kind of blob, right, where it's too narrow, the proportions are way, they're just off. The sill is too high,
the headlights.
It's got the stacked headlights. But as time goes on, this design doesn't look much different or much worse than anything on the market today.
There are some vehicles that struggle from bad proportions, and that makes them ugly. And then there's some vehicles that have good proportions, but the details are kind of ugly. This is a unique combination of both. But there were some cool features for it that you guys actually had. So yeah. There was the cooler, mm-hmm. right?
Center
or
console.
Refrigerator kind of thing, or is it a cooler?
No, the whole center console pulls out, and then it's a cooler, and you can take it picnicking. Yeah.
And famously, the tent.
The tent in the back.
Which was apparently pretty difficult to set up, wasn't it?
Very expensive and hard to set up. Yeah, we bought one. The car was $1,500 and the tent was $500. The tent, though, was kind of a cool idea.
Was necessary.
Yeah.
You had to have the tent.
It's like a Range Rover. Split tailgate, right? So you could go camping at the back.
Just like a Range Rover.
Just like a Range Rover. Integrated air compressor in the back, which was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yep, integrated air compressor for like bikes and stuff.
Here you are, setting up the tent, Tommy.
Setting up the tent, you got it.
Wow.
Speakers in the back with audio controls, so you can listen to the radio and adjust from the trunk.
A little tailgating.
Yep, the seat cubbies behind the front seats were backpacks, so you could pull them off and take them on your hikes, which was cool.
That is cool.
So like a lot of really thoughtful little details. Plus, it had VersaTrak all-wheel drive, which is a torque vectoring rear diff. That actually was like a fluid-based system that could send power left and right. So there was a lot of really interesting stuff. And this car previewed so many of the modern design cues, like sloped rear tailgates or
cladding.
Hatches. Cladding, exactly.
A lot of cladding.
Stacked headlights, right? The low beams with the turn signals.
Yeah.
It's everything. Every single car now has the headlights below the turn signals.
Yeah, that's maybe the worst thing that they brought.
That they did. Yeah.
Into the main world.
Also, 3.4 V6, pretty indestructible. Am I selling you on the Aztec?
Yeah, there's parts of it that I do actually think is pretty cool. It's just the car itself is what I don't like. I like the features.
What does that mean? You like the features, but not the car.
Yeah.
So if you could take the features and put it in any other car, you would do that?
I would be sold like that.
Okay, gotcha. So you're not, so did I sell you the Liberty? What about the Renegade?
Definitely not.
Okay. And the Aztec?
You know what? I'd say for the Liberty and for the Aztec, I'm a soft no.
Soft no. And for the Renegade?
It's a hard no.
A hard no. Okay. Yeah. All right. So I'm a one-ish out of three. But genuinely, I would own an Aztec again.
Yeah, but I believe you.
It's got to be the Holy Grail.
Well, and this was, what's the Holy Grail?
The Holy Grail. We speak about the Holy Grail in hushed tones.
Oh, boy.
It's got to be 2001. It has to be a 2001.
Is that the only year with cladding?
The only year with cladding.
Brush up on your Aztec facts,
yes.
People.
Has to be 01. Has to be yellow.
Yellow? Yeah, the hero
yellow.
Color.
The hero color. And ideally, I don't know if you could get this in VersaTrak, but like those hideous like tri-spoke Pontiac wheels would
look
perfect.
I know the ones.
That's the Holy Grail. All right. You heard it here first, folks. So if you find one of those, send us an email because I'm in the market always for a yellow 01 Aztec with VersaTrak.
I'll tell you what. And this is not a transition, by the way, because this is not one of my picks. But Aztec is cool. It's no Honda Element. And I'm not including that on this list because I don't think it's that controversial to like the Element. The
People
Element's actually
the Element,
a pretty good
yeah.
car. Yeah. So that's not that controversial. But this one is. It's been previously discussed in a podcast. Not this podcast, but our other podcast, Car-ish. Whoa, shameless plug.
Wow.
Oh, out of nowhere. Definitely check that out. But C4 Corvette.
The worst Corvette.
See, hard disagree. Yeah.
Okay.
So this is the strange and an objectively wrong thing, but the C4 Corvette is my favorite Corvette. So that's pictured on screen is my 1988 C4 Corvette, had the Doug Nash 4+3. Everything about it is all the things that people tell you to not walk away from, but run. The Doug Nash has a terrible reputation. Gotta be honest, transmission is not that bad. It's really not that bad. It's actually kind of an interesting transmission to shift because you have an overdrive that you can kick on in. It's a four-speed with a selectable overdrive.
So explain like how the 4+3 thing is weird.
Yeah.
Explain how it works and then explain how you drive it.
Yeah, so the way that I would typically drive it is when I would start up the car, I would press the button on the top of the shifter that you use to activate the overdrive, but pressing it when you first fire up the car will deactivate it. So that way I'll drive the car around as a normal four-speed because it's just a four-speed manual paired to basically a two-speed automatic behind it. And then if I was on the highway, I would go fourth, kick on overdrive. So drive it almost like a lot of old school cars where you would use overdrive if you were really hauling at high speeds. But you could kick on overdrive in second, third, and fourth. The strange thing is you couldn't use it to split gears because second overdrive was a taller gear than third. Third overdrive taller than fourth. So if you were going to try and drive it as if it were a seven speed, it would be weird. You would go one, two, three, second overdrive, then, you know, I can't remember. There was one time that I had, four, and then third overdrive.
Then four overdrive.
Yeah, so it would be weird.
So why did they...
Transmission wasn't actually that bad, though.
Why do you think they did that? Like, basically, the way you drove it...
People were still married to the idea of a four-speed. Four on the floor.
Okay, so...
That was kind of a classic thing.
So you drove it essentially like a five-speed, where you drove it as a four-speed, and then on the highway you went into quote-unquote fifth gear.
Mm-hmm.
But you could activate that overdrive in second or third or fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever find a need to put, like, second overdrive on?
No. No, you could just drive it at low speeds as a four-speed and then use fourth overdrive if you were on the highway. And to the car's credit, you... At like 90 mile an hour, you would be turning 2,300 RPM in the car. So you would be getting 25 miles per gallon plus at beyond highway speeds because the car's so low profile. And it also, because it was low profile, didn't push a lot of air, felt very stable at speed. The brakes on this car, we tested against a lot of other 80s performance cars, but also a lot of modern cars. And genuinely, the ABS system on this car was actually really good. So this car had great brakes, had massive rear tires, like a 285 width rear tire, and a pretty tough driveline. So you could stick it in a first, rev it up, clutch drop it, spin up the rear tires. It had quick steering, two turns from lock to lock. It was a, kind of a lazy V8, 245 horsepower, but 340 pound-feet of torque. So you didn't get much out of revving it out, but it still had a nice punch down low, enough to be much quicker than normal traffic. And it had enough rubber on the car that it actually handled pretty well, low center of gravity, not a lot of body roll. So it was a fun car to drive, a lot more modern and fun to drive, other than maybe the experience and the romanticism of the C3. C4 drives way better than the C3, better than the C2, better than the C1, but it's still kind of retro.
The problem is you also have 5, 6, 7, and 8.
Yeah, and the 5, 6, 7, and 8 drive better than the C4, hands down, but they lose that retro aspect because the C4 was kind of cool, a slightly pointy wedge car-shaped 80s look. You also had the funky digital gauges in the car on the earlier models, pre-facelift. I like the, you know, the saw blade wheels that were on the car. So all of that stuff to me gave it kind of a retro feeling. The other thing about it, and this is the most important thing, because you can disagree with me on all the rest and that's fine, but it's a pretty solid car. I stand by that. And they're very cheap. So you can have a lot of fun with this vehicle for not a lot of money. Everyone writes them off, and I think the people that write them off haven't really spent a lot of time with this car because it's awesome.
Well, the thing is, though, I agree. I think that they are very underrated. And as a sports car from the 80s, they were very impressive, and they were faster than a lot of heavy-hitting cars, and they had their own racing championship, and they had their own racing championship because they kept winning the European championship, and they said, get out of here. The problem with the case is you've got like a 495-horsepower C8 Corvette or a Z06 or a C701. I mean, there's so many iconic Corvettes.
Yeah.
The uphill battle is saying that you like the 245-horsepower 87 Corvette over a C6 ZR1. So is it like the character of the car you like the most? Is it the looks? Like, what is it that...
I think it's the fun per dollar that you can have, because like a C6 Z06 is just a better car than this in every way. But I like older cars. I like retro cars. And this one, to me, I like the look of this car actually a lot. What we're looking at here on screen, to me, that actually does it for me. I know a lot of people hate that, but I think mine in particular, because it was also in good shape, was among some of the better looking C4s that you see out there.
For sure. So let me ask you a hypothetical. Someone gives you a car.
And that car was 10 grand.
It was amazing. But you've got two cars, okay. You can never sell these cars, so the money's out of the equation, and you can't modify these cars. That's the key. One of them is a C6 Z06.
Right. Yeah, LS7.
LS7, a car I know.
500 horsepower.
The other one is a blue or black, whichever one you like more, C4 Grand Sport. Which one are you taking home? That's the question. You see?
It's a C4 Grand Sport.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because the other thing, I love the C6 Z06, but if I had that, I would have to do heads and cam. Because they drop valves.
You would have to.
I would have to.
It's the law.
No way around it. Yeah, so it's also partly sentimental. When I was a little kid, my dad bought me a toy C4 ZR1 Grand Sport. And for a long time in my childhood, that was my favorite car ever. And just the fact that in my 20s, I was able to afford to get not a Grand Sport, but a C4 Corvette, and to own a Corvette, have that experience of the big V8, the long hood, removable top, two-seater, bright red interior, cool wheels. Right, that was quite the experience for $10,000. So the money really factors into it a lot. But I just had such a good time owning this car. I really did. That's the hardest thing that I've ever sold. And I still think about it a lot.
There you go. No, I agree with Case for the most part. I think they're highly underrated. But not as underrated as this car I'm going to pitch to you.
Good transition.
Thank you. V8, rear-wheel drive, manual transmissions, burnout machine.
God, I'm trying to think. Like, what is a...
$7,000?
What's a bad car that has all those things?
Convertible, if you want.
Hard. It sounds like you're describing a good car.
It is. It is a really good car. Very reliable.
Oh, is it a Jaguar?
It is not a Jaguar. It's American-made. Five-speed manual.
Interesting.
LSD. 4.6-liter modular V8.
Oh, yeah, you lost me.
I'm talking about the SN95 Ford Mustang. The mid-90s, the launched in 94. Yeah. I hated these cars when I was uneducated.
But the SN95 is specifically the facelifted one.
No, it's the pre-facelift. It's the bubble one.
What was the facelifted?
It's called the New Edge.
New Edge.
Yes.
Okay.
And I haven't spent a lot of time at New Edges, and I heard they're also good, but I love SN9. Look at that car. Tell me that doesn't do something for you.
You got a face for radio. the New Edge.
It's me as a car form.
Yeah. The New Edge. That was mean. The New Edge I like. We did own one of these, though, and it's like a worse C4 Corvette.
It's not a worse C4 Corvette.
Does it handle better than the C4 Corvette?
No.
Was it faster than the C4 Corvette?
No.
Was it less expensive than the C4 Corvette?
Yes, it was.
How much was ours?
$6,000.
The red one? The convertible
red one was $6,500, I think. It was, this was one
Are we
of,
sure about that?
Yes. It was one of the greatest cars you can buy for like $6,000 or $7,000.
If that's true, then, okay, then you know, I can compromise there a little bit, because if you're going to make a thing inexpensive, I can excuse a
or
lot.
Maybe it was eight. Maybe it was yeah. less than your car, but it was still a very small amount of money.
It wasn't enough less.
It was case. Here's my pitch on the SN95. Is it ugly?
Yes,
is a little ugly, but it's kind of becoming cool in a retro sort of way.
In an ugly way?
In like a 90s kind of TLC sort of
sure,
way.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And very reliable.
Especially with the leather bra on the front of the car, that completes the look.
So 4.6 liter modular V8, yep. 215 galloping horsepower. 5-speed manual transmission. But the great thing about these cars is you can just beat the snot out of them and mm-hmm. they just come back for more. And unlike your Corvette, you can do it with 4 people in the car.
Yeah, that's also one of the disadvantages though.
Well, you think you don't want the friends.
I don't have them. And also the 4 seats makes the vehicle feel less special.
It does a little bit, but it also makes it work as like an actual car.
Yeah. Right?
Plus, if you care about this kind of thing, which I know you do, airbags. 2 airbags, pretty good stuff, right?
My Corvette had like it had a padded dash.
Your face would have slammed into a little bit of 80s vinyl.
That was only on the passenger side. A safety feature afforded only to those who dare ride with you.
But much like your C4, this is the unloved Mustang. And mm-hmm. it really shouldn't be because it's got all the Mustang goodness that they've had since the 60s. Solid axle, reliable V8, sounds good with an exhaust.
Another thing that makes it worse than the Corvette.
What?
The solid rear axle.
Well, yeah, but who needs independent rear suspension?
What is the difference between that and a two-wheel drive pickup truck?
That is a convertible. Obviously. No, it's cool, Case. This is a cool, it's lightweight-ish.
Well.
Ish. It's got...
If you put ish after anything, then you can use that adjective to describe whatever you want.
The early ones also had the legendary 5-liter V8. You could also get them in the Cobra version. I'm telling you, SN95's so much cheaper than the new Edges, so much uglier, but just as good. And they're just awesome, awesome Mustangs. I really like them.
I will admit, I did enjoy driving this car
as much
around.
As your Corvette.
No, not even close. I liked the Corvette better, but I did enjoy driving it around. Like you said, it was a car that you could just feel was a burnout machine. Mm-hmm. The convertible, not as much my thing. I would like it better if it was a hardtop. I think that you could make this early SN95 be cool.
How would you make it cool?
I don't know. It would take a lot, but I think it's possible.
Case is like, I could turn this garbage can into something worth driving.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I don't actually dislike that car that much, but it was slower than my Corvette.
It was slower than your Corvette. All right, what's your next one?
My next one is one... So we'll bring it to some common ground.
Okay.
So you already know.
It's a Range Rover.
Yeah, it's Land Rover products. So we've had enough here where we disagree. Now, let's pitch out to all of the probably, you know, much more reasonable, stable, better educated people out there. Let's pitch to them why we love Land Rovers so much, because it really is an affliction.
An affliction.
Yeah, it's a problem.
I mean, I think that it's kind of like that Touareg we were talking about. Like what I like about, especially the older ones, is that they can wear multiple kind of hats, but they do it very effectively. So they can wear the posture at a hotel hat. They can wear the, I'm Jeremy Clarkson's farm, put hay in the back hat. They can wear the off-roading hat because they have skid plates in their suspension. They're really good on the road for what they are. They're incredible off-road. They just kind of do everything that you'd want a four-wheel drive to do mm-hmm. and an on-roader to do. That's why I like them.
Yeah, and I agree. I agree with all of that. The other thing that I love is just their ability to both be extremely capable off-road. And I don't think, you know, I guess it depends on maybe some of the newer Land Rover products, not quite as capable as some of the older stuff that we like. LR3, LR4, solid axle discoveries, Defenders.
P38s.
Yeah, yeah, P38 also P38, on solid axles. Yeah, yeah, L320, L322, all these different ones that we like. I don't think anyone would take away from them that they do genuinely have some serious baked-in four-wheel drive capability. And we've seen these vehicles do unbelievable things that you normally don't see Land Rovers or Range Rovers doing because they're typically expensive. Also, just because a lot of the stuff that you see out on a trail is the same kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
So these are both unique, but capable still off-road. And then when you get them on-road, surprisingly comfortable and refined. So the combination of being able to do both of those things well is maybe best in some Land Rover products as compared to anything else. Because we love, absolutely love Jeep Wranglers, things like that. But on-road, a little compromised.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really great 4x4s out there, but these split that difference so well. And they're very unique. They're also just fun to drive. If you've never gotten in a Land Rover product and spent some time driving it, you might be surprised that they've got a lot of personality. They're really fun to drive. They're just so nice. And there's a lot of history there, too. Mm-hmm. Camel Trophy. Yeah. I love Land Rovers, and they're so cheap to buy.
What about, okay, but all the comments. But Case, what about the reliability?
What? I've never heard of this. Is there an issue with their reliability?
Well, according to literally every human soul ever alive, they will bankrupt you and financially ruin you, and you will become divorced and your kids will catch on fire and then your house will flood into the sea. But if you were to buy one. But the reality is, like, I don't think they're for everybody. Like, if you
absolutely not.
If you are in this room and own a 2007 Toyota RAV4, it's not a good choice for you, right?
Yeah.
Like our producer Cole. But yeah. If you're an enthusiast, like, I'm not sure that it's going to be that much worse than a lot of other enthusiast vehicles that people collect and love, like old Volkswagens and all this kind of stuff that, you know, that just old and crusty is going to break down. A newer Land Rover is not going to be worse than that.
Yeah. And here's the thing, at the end of the day, almost always the things that people say about these online, like you can't drive one brand new from the dealership to your house 10 miles away without having to call a tow truck twice. That it's almost always overblown. I'm not saying that they don't have issues. We have both owned Land Rovers, and we've poured quite a bit of time and energy into them. But here's the thing. From my perspective, especially if you own other vehicles, if you're shopping around for the only vehicle that you're going to use
forever
to get you to the airport and get you to work and make sure you don't get stranded kind of thing, then probably not one of these. But it also depends on which one you're looking at, because there's a spectrum of reliability even within Land Rover. The thing about it is, if you're an enthusiast and you care more about just never having to touch a wrench in your whole life, like if your skin is allergic to wrench material, a Land Rover is not going to be a good buy. But if you don't mind working on it every now and then, and you want something that's also fun and interesting to drive and a little unique, not the same thing that you always see out there on the trail, for an enthusiast, it can make sense.
Yeah. No, I agree. Look, I'm coming up to a year and a half and 18,000 miles on my LR3. And
You got for $4,500.
I did. $4,500. And I had a big discussion with my videographer because he didn't believe me. And he said, how much is your LR3 needed in the last 18,000 miles? And I said, nothing out of the ordinary. It's needed fluid changes, and that is it. He's like, well, that's probably not true. I'm like, it is. I swear. My wife drives it every day, and then I just put oil in it when it needs oil. But, like, that's all it's needed. It just keeps going.
Yeah, and granted, that's an anecdote of one person's experience with one model.
Definitely.
I will say that first-generation Range Rover Sports and LR3s are
the exception for being long-lived, for sure.
Are particularly reliable, but one of my best buddies, he's got a Discovery 2 with over 200,000 miles, and he has to work on it every now and then. But he drives it, he loves it, he keeps it running, and it hasn't bankrupted him or killed him.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Believe it or not.
A knock on wood.
Wait a month.
And people love anecdotes, right? People always talk about, especially with pickup trucks, oh, my cousin had a whatever, and it was terrible. People love anecdotes. We've owned a lot of Land Rovers.
Mm-hmm. Too many.
So many at this company. And what's the worst thing that's happened to one of our Land Rovers?
Well, it was the new Defender that had to go in a couple times.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was.
Which was the first one was Land Rover's fault. The second one was the dealer's fault. And the third one was perfect. But from a used, because most folks watching this are looking at them used, they've nothing. I mean, we've had Disco 2s and P38s and 2LR3s, and like they just they haven't broken down.
And
on
for
us.
Years, these aren't vehicles that we own for a week.
No, no. Yeah, I mean, we've had this one for a couple of years. We had our Disco 2 for a year and a half. We had our LR3 for a couple of years. I mean, we do like them a lot, and we do hold on to them, and they're really good.
Yeah. So. Once again, it's a vehicle that you absolutely have to keep up with. You got to do maintenance on it. But if you're willing to put in the effort and the energy, the payoff can be worth it for the right person. If you get behind the wheel of one of these and drive it and find the same kind of joy that we find, then it might be worthwhile, because I never had any interest in these before working here and driving some of the ones that we owned. And then spending some time with them, seeing that the ones that we were owning were feasible to live with, and looking at the prices that they cost versus the more reliable things that you might cross shop them against.
Case has owned one for now a couple of years. He's driven it a handful of times. Right?
Yeah. I took the motor out of mine to put in an LS.
A Corvette engine. Yeah, so that's a little bit of a different story.
It's a little self-inflicted.
Yeah. And finally, speaking of common ground, you're really going to like this one.
I can't wait.
It's from the brand that's opposite of Land Rover. It's our favorite Toyota. Case and I talk about this frequently. And it's a car we both are enthused about. We both think highly underrated. It's, of course, the first generation Toyota Prius.
Oh, God. Yeah, Tommy loves the first generation Prius so much. I got to say, I'm more of a first gen Insight guy.
Yeah, but that's.
Is it too cool? Is that the problem?
Everybody has that take. Everyone's like, well, the Insight's a manual and a coupe. And I'm like, Insights are cool. We've never done a video on one, Cole. the Insights are cool and they're largely more interesting. But first gen Prius, what is it about the first gen Prius you don't like?
That I guess just that it's not the Insight, because I'd just rather have the Insight. It's kind of hard for me to separate the two, to think about one and not the other. I will admit to you that, well, I don't know what I can admit to you about it, actually. It's
So let's, I know people are tuning out in rapid, all three people have left that were listening. But technically we didn't get the first gen Prius, as you know.
Yeah, of course.
As we know.
This is technically actually the second generation, the first one that we got here in
the
States.
Right, yeah, I'm talking the second gen, really, because the first one was Japanese only, although there is one for sale on Craigslist now for only...
Imported?
$6,500. Bucks.
How much rust?
Some. Yeah. But here's the thing, you didn't even click on that ad I sent you, Case.
Oh, no, I did. That I know that. Yeah, now I remember.
I'm kidding.
So there's a group chat between Roman and Tommy and I. Tommy sent in this group chat a first generation Prius. Then Roman, what did he send?
It was like a Model T or something.
It wasn't. It was less cool than that. And my only response was we have very different tastes in cars.
But the reason I like the first gen Prius is because it was such a technological masterpiece when it debuted in the late 90s, early 2000s, right? It was it what set the stage for transportation in the 21st century, and now we're really starting to see what it led to, which is mass electrification. And the car was beautifully engineered. It was such an innovative idea to combine these two powertrains. And like you said, the Insight, I think the Insight technically beat it by a couple months.
In the States,
you're right. But the Insight was very compromised. Like, it was a two-door only. It was a strict two-seater, and it was just really small and looked like a snake stuck underneath a rock.
When that compromise, what? That's so hard to picture. That compromise, I can't move on from that.
I didn't come up with that. That's what people use to describe the GM EV1, but it applies to the Insight too.
Weird.
A snake trapped under a rock.
Anyway.
Kind of the...
I think that compromise is what makes the Insight cool.
But this sold better, and I know you like a well-selling car.
Yeah.
You like the volume
sales.
The
more of them you build, excited I get.
Case gets more excited, yeah. But I'd love to own one someday. Not for like a long time, but just for a few months. And they've got cool stuff, like the pistol grip shifter, just like your C4 Corvette.
Wow.
Pistol grip shifter, it's got that little screen that shows you your power distribution.
Really, it shares a lot with the C4 Corvette.
Which, no, Cole.
Are we sure they're not on the same platform?
No, not all those. The one, there's just one, you can see it there, right below that. left. That
oh,
one.
Oh, wow.
Look how cool that shifter is. Do you see that jutting out of the dash?
That looks like it was designed completely separately from the rest of the car. You know what I mean?
Look how cool that interior is.
The screen, the old screen is pretty cool.
This is not a time for laughter,
cool.
Cole.
Yeah. Tommy just signed up to be ridiculed today.
Old technology is cool.
Old technology is cool.
Yeah, the gauges on your C4 Corvette, right? Ugh. Old technology. That's the same stuff.
The screen in the center, I like. The shifter, I'm not sold.
How about the hearing aid base?
Why is it so huge?
Well, so you can, because you're a man. You grab onto it.
Really?
It takes a real bicep to get a first-gen Prius into gear.
That's the card you're going to pull?
You go, ka-chunk.
My favorite story with Tommy and the Prius, and this is not, by the way, like a persona he's putting on for this podcast. No, he genuinely loves like the Prius, and he has to pitch it to people all the time. So this is a well-practiced speech that he's got. But...
Even
my
the Toyota
favorite.
People don't buy it.
Yeah.
They're like, no one's this excited about a Prius.
Yeah, they think Tommy's just being like
polite. Like I'm brown-nosing. No, I genuinely. Yeah. What's your favorite Tommy Prius story?
When you were very young, what was it your mom's car? She got a second generation Prius?
Mm-hmm.
And young Tommy was very confused when people started making fun of the Prius. So he was like, what? What's going on? This car is a technological masterpiece, an engineering feat.
I think it's called the XV20 generation of Prius.
Who doesn't know that?
When that launched, I think in 2004, my mom got one of the first ones, and it was, guys, it was so cool. It was a package 8.
For 10 minutes in Boulder.
For 10 minutes in Boulder. Cool. You're right. For 10 minutes in Boulder, it was the coolest thing. Leather interior, heated seats.
Brad Pitt had one.
Tom Cruise maybe had one. Probably not. Larry David had one.
And he's cool.
He's cool. Damn cool. That's right. But like it was, I thought it was just the coolest car, and then everyone started making fun of it, and then it went downhill. But I think the one before that Prius, the one that came out like 01 in the States, mark your calendars, that thing's going to be popular someday.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny sometimes. There are times that Roman and Tommy... like when we got that Honda Insight we had for a while that had bad paint and too many miles and was falling apart. I remember you guys pitching it as a future classic.
Yes, it will be. Not that one. That one was horrible. But a good Insight, I genuinely think is going to be a future classic. Yeah. Same thing with the yellow 2001 Pontiac Aztec with VersaTrak all-wheel drive.
Future classics.
Do you have one more?
Invest in them now. Yeah, I have one last one that is something, it's not even a specific car, but it's just a sort of car that I know you don't like.
Okay.
Modified cars.
Yeah, not into modified cars. Mm. Because here's the thing, you know, I didn't like them when I was a kid.
You did or didn't?
I did not.
Oh.
I did not like them.
You were a very ornery old little guy.
Because I just feel like the companies that built these cars, right?
Yeah.
Should be able to have say on what the car should look like. They were the craftsmen that put the art piece together.
But not the customer, and that's how the Aztec was born.
Well, look, maybe some of the car artisans were better than other artisans. But I just feel like, and I always loved history as a kid, and I liked that kind of like that cars marked that time in history. And I felt like when you started messing with them, like you're screwing with the space-time continuum. Just leave them be, right? They built the 01 Prius to look like the 01 Prius. Don't put an LS3 in it, right? Like you're ruining.
You say that, but that sounds pretty rad.
And if you do want an LS3, buy a C6 Corvette. And that's another great experience. It already has the LS3 in it. Plus, you're always going to, in case after he just spent 2 years putting an LS in a Land Rover, you're always going to make it a little bit worse.
Are you sure about that?
Because think maybe not Land Rover, but think about every other company that spent $300 million developing that powertrain to work in that platform and that architecture. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, but it would be better if in my garage I put a different engine from a different company in there.
And I love that argument of yours because on the surface it's like, wow, well, they do spend a lot of money on R&D. So how could you possibly improve a car?
How could you?
So... Do you figure that Chevy pickup trucks have Rancho shocks? Because that is the, hands down, the best shock that billions of dollars of development can come up with. Or another vehicle that's got a steel body shock with a single seal and 4 inches of travel.
That's true. But yes, you're right. They put the Rancho on there because it was the cheapest crap they could market as being a premium shock. Mm-hmm. 100%. But that Rancho, in combination with the suspension geometry, someone spent their whole career working on that, right? And sure, the Rancho was a bad choice. And maybe you're right. Maybe you changed the Rancho. But then you're also changing that shock and the spring rate. And all once you start lifting things, you're going to mess with – I mean, these companies spend so many hundreds of hours of testing on-road and off-road. And I understand that, like, if you're trying to build a rock buggy, then start with the Wrangler and then you go crazy, right? But then you're ruining all that work, which is kind of fine because you're purposely building it for this.
And that's the point.
But I don't really understand, like, the modified cars where, like, you do it – primarily to have it look different or cooler.
Sure, yeah. I mean, if you're putting a 10-foot tall spoiler on a car, look, at the end of the day, to each their own, whatever you... I am never going to worry about how somebody spends money on a car that is not in my name.
Neither, for the record. That's a good point.
I don't care. So put 10-foot spoilers on your car and everything, but that's not really what I'm trying to defend. More so, because There have been times where we've tested some trucks with aftermarket suspensions that, because we're in the position we're in, maybe they were a prototype suspension, or maybe it was a suspension that was spec'd out for you to have like a big heavy camper on the back.
Sure.
And then you drive it without that big heavy camper, or it's a prototype suspension that's not really fully baked. And I think a couple of those have left a bad taste for you and for Roman?
Yes, for sure.
But if you do things right, I think if you modify things the right way, then you can take the weak points of a vehicle and refine and improve them.
What if there's a vehicle that has no weak points? Like,
no such thing.
The bone stock, the I think the pinnacle of automobiles, which we both agree on, which they perfected out of the gate, was the 2001 Land Rover Discovery 2. It was the pinnacle of automobiles. It
had something I would certainly never modify.
An all-aluminum V8, sophisticated.
Best head gaskets on the planet.
Bosch fuel injection, solid axle and coil spring with optional rear air suspension. It had the right size tire.
Yeah.
It
was like a no one would ever modify that rear air suspension out of it because never
fail.
Because
it was perfect. A 255/65 R17. Arguably the greatest
the
tire
ever
made.
The most capable tire size.
So why mess with perfection? You know, and I'm sure Case agrees with that. They also, the color palettes they came out of the factory with, especially the Alpine whites, that was the high water
Tommy's
mark.
Just calling out all the things I've changed on mine. I think you've perfectly made my argument there.
A little bit. I understand your point.
So, yeah, it depends on the vehicle. I wouldn't take like the 05, 06 Ford GT.
What about a Miura?
I wouldn't modify that. I wouldn't modify a Miura. I wouldn't modify, like, Porsche 911s are pretty great as they come.
E30 M3?
No, I think, you know, that's a great car as it sits. There's plenty of cars that, to me, are great as they sit. And then there's other cars that I look at and I see it as a canvas for modification, like the Jeep Wrangler that you love so much.
Yeah, that is part of the big deal.
Think about a stock Jeep Gladiator.
Yeah, it's kind of dumpy, especially a sport. You're right.
Yeah.
I understand the point. Yeah. And I think that you're right. There are, you put it perfectly, there are platforms that are built for it. Mm-hmm. And then there is the 2001 Discovery. And that is up there with the Miura, the Testarossa.
It's a good thing mine is a 2000.
Oh, shit. Well, folks, let us know what you think of our controversial takes on today's podcast episode.
Yeah, and how right I am and how wrong Tommy is. Just drop that down below.
We'll read all your comments and respond to them in the next one, perhaps. Cole behind the camera, Tommy and Case. We'll see you next time. Head over to AltTFL. Thanks for watching and listening.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.